This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments this week in a case about the FDA's handling of the abortion medication mifepristone. A group of anti-abortion doctors and organizations filed a lawsuit claiming that the FDA violated the law when it expanded access to the drug in 2016 and 2021. Their original claim also challenged the initial approval of the medication. The justices haven't issued a ruling yet, but some of them sounded skeptical of the arguments and legal standing that brought the case to them. Here's Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson responding to some of the concerns brought up in the suit.
I see it that the injuries that the respondents allege, as you've articulated them, are conscience injury, that they are being forced to participate in a medical procedure that they object to. And so the obvious common sense remedy would be to provide them with an exemption, that they don't have to participate in this procedure. And you say, and you've said here several times, that federal law already gives them that. So I guess then what they're asking for in this lawsuit is more than that. They're saying because we object to having to be forced to participate in this procedure, we're seeking an order preventing anyone from having access to these drugs at all.
If the court ruled against the FDA, it could limit access women have to the commonly used abortion drug across the country. It could have an impact on other FDA approvals. We're taking a closer look at these legal arguments and what impacts the court's decision could have. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about mifepristone and the Supreme Court case? Do you think the FDA should be allowed to keep making the drug widely available? Should it be available by mail, which is one of the issues at stake here? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rachel Ribeschet is the Peter J. Liacouras Professor of Law and Dean of the Beasley School of Law at Temple University. She researches reproductive health law and family law and has written extensively on issues related to mifepristone and medication abortion. Rachel, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we head to the court, Rachel, can you remind us again what mifepristone is, how it fits into the abortion medication landscape?
Medication abortion is a set of pills, and it has two drugs. The mifepristone is the first drug. You take that before 10 or 12 weeks of pregnancy, and you follow that with the second drug, misoprostol, 24 to 48 hours later. Mifepristone is the only drug approved by the FDA to stop a pregnancy, to end a pregnancy, because it stops the pregnancy from developing. Misoprostol, the second drug, clears the uterus. And so they do different things, but they're usually prescribed together. And mifepristone is the drug at issue in this case and the first drug in a medication abortion.
And take us through the legal procedure. Who was challenging the FDA's approval? What exactly were they challenging in the early stages of this process?
So the litigation is brought by a group that formed shortly before it lodged its complaint, the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. It's a group of physicians who had joined together to contest that mifepristone is safe and to ask that the court in Amarillo, Texas, a federal district court, suspend FDA approval of mifepristone, which the FDA granted in the year 2000. They also claim that if the court decided that the FDA didn't err in putting mifepristone on the market in the first place, that the FDA was wrong to relax some of the restrictions on mifepristone in 2016 and in 2021. So there were multiple claims, but Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, their central argument is that medication abortion has caused more people to present at ERs, which then they, as physicians that work, some of them occasionally, some of them more frequently in ERs, are then required to treat and complete abortions for those patients. And that's the injury that they suffer. And that's the group that's taking this litigation. And as you note in the quote, there's a lot of debate about the remedy they're asking for and whether or not they've suffered any injury at all, not being abortion providers, not being certified to prescribe medication abortion, and the like.
That seems like it's been a big argument all through this process leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that clip we played from Justice Brown Jackson. This not so much the question of abortion, good or bad, legal or illegal, but of standing of these physicians and should they have the right to be the ones challenging this in the first place? It's a little technical and legal sense, but how important a part of this is this?
It's crucial, and you're absolutely right. I think the justices asked a lot of questions about standing. So you don't get to the meat of the case without standing. We don't let people go to court and file a lawsuit and sue if they are not directly injured, if they are not a party that has the grievance in which they have felt the harm. So if, you know, if there is a brawl and three people are in the brawl, but I'm standing next to it, and those three people might have claims for assault or battery or the like, you know, because they've been in the fight, but I don't get to claim assault because I was standing next to a fight and saw it happen. That's a really rough way to describe standing, but you need it you need it in every case. And there's different kinds of standing and lots of different doctrines of how you establish it. But the core issue here is that the doctors who make up Alliance or Hippocratic Medicine, you know, I think, as I mentioned, they do not provide abortions. They do not see abortion patients. They do not work for abortion clinics. They are not working at hospitals that have an abortion practice of which they participate. Their claim is that medication abortion increases the likelihood that there will be patients that arrive in ERs, which they might have to treat. And so the Solicitor General made the argument that that's too attenuated. There are too many things that they have to happen for someone to be directly implicated. And where Justice Barrett spent a lot of time, for instance, is saying, you know, even asking about conscience provision, refusal. So even if you're in a place where someone needs emergency care and that care involves an abortion, there are laws that protect your right to not provide care that you have religious or moral objection to. And so, you know, that standing relates, this question of injury relates to the remedy problem, because, you know, what they're claiming is their injury, which should give them standing. You know, there's a gap between what would solve the injury, refusing to provide care you object to, with what they're asking for, taking a drug off the market for everyone to use. So it's bound, standing is key, and it's bound up with a lot of different issues in the case.
Talking to law professor Rachel Ribeschet from Temple University, looking at the Mifepristone medication abortion case came before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Fairchild. Chris, hi.
Hi. So I wonder if you could maybe explain. I've heard that there is this Texas connection where all of these respondents have kind of coalesced around, I believe it's Amarillo in Texas, and all cases filed in that district fall before one specific judge who seems to be very receptive to these arguments irrespective of standing.
Chris, thanks for the call. He's referring to U.S. District Judge Matthew Kaczmarek in Amarillo, a household name in people following these stories. That also puts it in the Fifth Circuit, known as a fairly conservative circuit court, on its way to the Supreme Court. Rachel, how important is the selection of judges in cases like this?
Well, I think it's been pretty important. You know, Texas, their district courts have a rule that, that the cases where, you know, the case is heard where it's filed, and they have a number of single court districts. So what I mean by that is they have a district in which there's only one judge. And so if you file in Amarillo, and I think the caller is correct that Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine is a fairly new organization, it formed in Amarillo, and it formed likely and explicitly, I think that this has been reported on, so that it could take this case in Amarillo. And there's only one judge in Amarillo, so if you file in Amarillo, you're gonna get before Judge Kaczmarek. And you know, I think that there's a lot outside the abortion context being thought about, talked about, written about. Judge shopping and forum shopping. It happens in patent law, for instance, in the state of Texas. But in this case, I think it was purposeful. I think that's a really fair assumption that Alliance formed as an organization in Amarillo for the purpose of being able to take this case before the court that Judge Kaczmarek sits.
Chris, thanks for that call. Talking to Rachel Ribouchet from Temple University Law School, looking at how the FDA has administered the abortion pill, administered the abortion pill mifepristone, big U.S. Supreme Court case on that. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about abortion medication, about this legal challenge to it, your hopes, your fears for what comes out of the U.S. Supreme Court. Join in at 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Rachel Ribouchet, law professor and dean of the Beasley School of Law at Temple University, with us today to explain an ongoing U.S. Supreme Court case about the FDA's rules around the abortion drug mifepristone. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Rachel, you wrote a piece about factual claims being made on both sides of this case, and you've referenced one of them a couple times. The plaintiffs here are starting with the point that mifepristone is bringing more people to emergency rooms, questioning the safety as part of that. Can you talk about those claims and what we know about them?
So, you know, one of there's been now a lot of review of the research that Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine offered to suggest that people who are taking mifepristone are increasingly large proportion of the people who are arriving at ERs, and they extract from that these safety claims. But a lot of that has been debunked, that people who are arriving at ERs after taking mifepristone, they're often, the research isn't detailing what their cause for going to an ER is. Is it an adverse reaction to the drug? Is it some other condition? Is it something unrelated to the medication abortion entirely? And, you know, the research also doesn't seem to, you know, distinguish. So it said another way, the research isn't distinguishing the reasons mm-hmm. for going to an ER. And you know, the government, the FDA, and the Danco, the manufacturer of Mifprex, the brand name for mifepristone, they have a lot of research, countless studies that demonstrate that mifepristone is a really safe drug. What's a little strange about the litigation is that mifepristone has a very strong track record of safety and efficacy, but it's one of the most regulated drugs on the market. So far from being too loose in regulating or restricting mifepristone, the FDA has imposed limits on its distribution and on its prescription in ways that it does not do for drugs that have a similar or worse safety profile than mifepristone. So I think that's a lot of people are watching this litigation because there's a contestation of what is the safety record for mifepristone. The safety has been on pretty solid ground, and there are now these emergent studies that seek to question it. And you have at least the Fifth Circuit and a district court in Amarillo, Judge Kaczmarek, that are willing to say, you know, any doubt is reason to doubt what the FDA decided. And so I guess it's worth also repeating that, you know, the FDA has an onerous process for putting drugs on the market. Pharmaceutical companies and others spend billions of dollars in research and development in order to comply with FDA standards, in order to get drugs on the market. And, you know, it's not surprising that one of the One group that's watching this litigation very closely is pharma, which came out very strongly against the decision by Judge Kaczmarek. You know, what does it mean to invest years and years and years, decades of research on drug safety, to have a court almost 25 years later say, no, the FDA was wrong?
Let's go back to our callers. We've got Rachel on the line in Milwaukee. Rachel, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Rachel.
Yeah, I just, you know, was calling as a female in support of hoping that this measure does not go any further. As a female with a daughter, maybe granddaughter someday, it's very concerning, you know, the amount of medical decisions that are being stripped away from us as females with our doctors, with medical, you know, degrees and educational backgrounds. It's scary to me, actually, to be totally honest, but I just am calling and, you know, as a, like I said, a female and supportive, hoping that this measure goes no further. And it's very even more concerning how these groups can just form and, you know, challenge these things in such a conservative district with a judge that obviously leans one way. And that, you know, creates policy that can affect my health.
Sure. And Rachel, thanks a lot for the call. Rachel Rebuchet, I won't ask you to predict what the Supreme Court is going to do, whether they come out in favor of what Rachel's hoping for. But from what you saw, what you heard in the questioning, what are you thinking as far as how the justices might make a decision?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, at least from what I heard from the oral argument, what I've read, others' takes on it, I think that there's reason to think that there is a majority of the court, so at least 5 votes, that think that standing, that the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine should not have standing in this case. And if you don't have standing, then you don't get to the question of did the FDA do the wrong thing, because you can't take the case in the first place. And from the questions I heard, I think there's a lot of skepticism that these physicians experienced any direct injury because of medication abortion being on the market. And any injury they may have experienced is injury that ostensibly can be addressed by refusing, you know, conscientious objection. So I do think that there is a good chance the Supreme Court could rule against the Alliance on the standing argument. If they clear that hurdle and they get to the core issues of the case, did the FDA err? Did it act arbitrarily and capriciously when it loosen the restrictions on mifepristone taking effect after 2016 and then after 2021 being finalized in 2023. You know, it's probably too in the weeds to get into now what exactly those changes were. But for my money, I think this case is entirely about male medication abortion. That last change was on the back of the pandemic. The FDA lifted the restriction that people had to pick up mifepristone in person at a healthcare facility, even though they could take it anywhere they wanted. They didn't have to consume it in the presence of a provider. You know, the 20,000 drugs that the FDA regulates, mifepristone was the only one that you had to pick up at a healthcare facility, but you could take in the privacy of your home or anywhere you chose without provider oversight. And there were lots of studies conducted over a decade or two in various countries, including ours, that showed that there really was no safety benefit. There was no harm reduction, that it was a superfluous restriction. And lifting it permanently has allowed virtual clinics, for instance, to proliferate, to thrive. And so these are clinics that are not brick and mortar clinics. They exist only online. You log on, you have counseling that's synchronous or asynchronous. You do informed consent process. It takes about 2 to 3 days from start to finish. Then pills are mailed to you. And it's hundreds of dollars less expensive than an abortion, a medication abortion at a clinic. So, you know, I think that's at the heart of this case. And my prediction is if there's a majority of the court that doesn't think that standing is a problem, there might be a majority of the court that zeroes in on that rule change as being problematic.
And Rachel, we just have a minute left. Some people have seen some foreshadowing references to the Comstock Act from the late 1800s that restricted lots of things, including birth control by mail. Do you see that as a potential next front of challenging abortion in the U.S.? Again, just in our last minute.
Yeah, absolutely. Comstock's not going anywhere. It's an 1873 law that makes it a federal crime to mail anything, any drug, any instrument, anything. The act actually says thing. That is part of an abortion. So that's definitely pills. It's definitely any gloves you would order to, you know, for a clinic. It could be a de facto nationwide abortion ban. And so if Comstock is applied as in the way that, for instance, the Heritage Foundation says it should be, it revives an over 150-year-old law to be a ban, even for states in which, where abortion is legal now.
Rachel, we'll leave it there and probably talk to you about that again in the future. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Rachel Ribochet, the Peter J. Liakouras Professor of Law and Dean of the Beasley School of Law at Temple University. She is with us today to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court case over how the FDA has handled the abortion drug mifepristone. Coming up tomorrow on the morning show, play ball. Major League Baseball and the Brewers season start up this week. Get a preview and join in with your hopes and dreams for the 2024 campaign. You can get things started right now with an email, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Are you excited about baseball this year, about Brewers baseball in particular? You going to try to make it to the home opener? Are you a lifelong fan? You could share some of your favorite moments and disappointments along the way. Again, email ideas@WPR.org and then join that baseball conversation that's coming up tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network.